There's a phrase in church life called the church is always in need of reform. Ecclesia semper reformandum, or whatever it is. I'd like to pretend like I can get the Latin off the top of my head, and I could probably have pretended and gotten away with it, but some of you out there would have just laughed at me. So the church is always in need of renewal. And so my butchering of that expression is a perfect example. Is you can say something over and over again, and then eventually you'll start to sputter it up. And then it's important to have life or reality say, excuse me, you mispronounced that. You've now made it no longer in the active mood. You've made it in the passive mood. So you've just totally ruined the meaning of the sentence. So try that again. And the church is always in need of renewal. And the church is always renewed by holiness, by people for whom God becomes the center of their life, and then they remind the church of what she should have been doing all the time. And usually when that happens, it's both joyful and slightly shameful, because you're happy to be able to see a pattern of holiness. You're like, wow, that's exactly what we've needed. And then the next thing, you're like, why was I so thick so as to not catch this? So a good example is actually St. Bernardine of Siena. He, as a young man, he was orphaned and then was taken care of by other members of his family. And then at the age of 20, around the year 1400, quite on the year 1400, a plague went through town, and he decided to go into the town and take care of the sick and the dying. And for a man like him, in that period of time, he's literally laying down his life for people, because he doesn't know if he's ever going to make it out again. And when he does that, a whole bunch of other young people around him, they start thinking, yeah, what's going on? So they all start rushing into town and start taking care of the sick and taking care of the dying. And gradually, Bernardine then becomes a Franciscan preacher, and he goes all the way around Italy, reforming the church, going through like the same thing that his father in faith, Saint Francis, goes through, and then not just a century earlier, reforming all of Italy and reminding them again of the faith that they had received and should be living. And then this is a constant cycle, that we're constantly going back to the same old lessons and constantly going back to the same old things to really understand that the gospel of Christ is earth-shattering, and that we can never just take it as a given datum of life. And one of the things that makes me truly sad about our culture is we treat God as the afterthought, and we treat the world as exciting. And nothing could be further from the truth. The world is inextricably boring on so many levels. You know, like if you just think about the pattern of life that a lot of people have to grow up with today, it's like, well, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to go to preschool. What are you going to do in preschool? My parents want me to learn how to read before the rest of the kids so that I can have a leg up on everybody else. And then when I get to school, I'm always going to be expected to be excelling in all these different things. And because it's so hard to be special, I'm going to find a sport or a skill or something that I can be better at than everybody else. And then they work themselves to death for swimming, and then they become 25, and of course nobody cares about their swimming anymore because we figured out who the best of the best are, and that's not you. So move on with your life. So get a career, do something like that. So get a job, find a da-da-da, and then it just becomes a machine. And one of the things in the machine is get married. And one of the things that I find really quite heartbreaking when I'm watching people my age try to find a spouse is they go through a job description in their head of the kind of spouse that they want. And they don't exist. Now, it's not to say that you're not going to find an amazing spouse, but what I mean to say is a person is not a job description. You can't just like sit on your armchair and say, this is the kind of person that I want. The whole thing about love is that it's an encounter with something you could have never expected. That you could meet somebody who is both a romantic and an accountant. And you're like, never would have thought that would have been possible, but here it is. Love is meant to surprise us, to shock us. And yet, it doesn't anymore. It's surprising how medical love is today. Well, we're a good match for each other. You know, we've never fought once. You know, we do. It's just, sometimes I've, like, when people tell me that and during marriage prep, I'm like, you haven't fought yet? Go. Your homework tonight is to go home, have a real conversation, you know, talk to your girlfriend, talk to your boyfriend on the phone, or, you know, actually have a dinner and engage with each other and run the risk of actually having an argument. Because then you might actually know who this person is. So yesterday, I lamented about something else in the culture and where we put stumbling blocks before the little ones. And one of the modern stumbling blocks comes with the issue of divorce and remarriage. Pope Francis had to address it in Amoris Laetitia, and it's been constantly discussed. And we know pretty unequivocally what Jesus says about the matter. But there's also the questions about how it all kind of fits together in people's day-to-day life. And what I consider the tragedy is the stumbling block has not been done recently. We're not doing penance for what we did to marriage a century ago. A lot of marriages today are not marriages because they went into it thinking that, well, you know, we're here to live with each other. She's supposed to help me with my finances. I'm supposed to help her. We're just to protect each other, and we're just supposed to just churn some children out. And then eventually, you know, maybe things will work out in the end. And then as people have gotten older, they just realized, that's not what happened. And what I find really heartbreaking, and I'll never tire of, you know, almost giving the same homiletic note over and over again, then people think that that's, they're boxed in, that because the world boxed them in, that somehow God has boxed them in. And he hasn't. He really hasn't. We need to explore these questions because, and it was, I never planned it that way, but the opening hymn was really touching when we were singing it. We put ourselves through untold misery because we don't put it before God. So Jesus says to the crowds, the reason why marriage got messed up was because of your hardness of heart. Hardness of heart means that we don't want what God wants. We want what we want, and we will use God as a tool insofar as it's beneficial for us. This is why you can have armies of people who claim to be religious and yet are not. This is why the church is always in need of reform, because all of us need to constantly smash our own hardness of heart and go back to what is God's original intent. The purposes of marriage are for a fruitful, faithful, and unitive marriage. And when you exclude one, it's not a marriage. And so the problem is that we need to go, in a sense, all in. That's what makes marriage exciting, which is why I never chose to do it. I don't think I had the courage to be able to look at a woman in her eyes and say, I'm willing to lay down everything for you. You know, like, I gave my life to God and he gave me you guys, and I don't think I have the courage to look at her in the eye and to be able to say, here's all my stuff. So if we don't go all in, there is no love. And every one of us who's even slightly romantic knows that this is the truth. If somebody has, like, their hands like this, and then they say, here, take my heart. No, not the left ventricle, just the other one. It doesn't have that passion. It doesn't have that joy to it. And that's why a lot of marriages today are broken, because they never started that way. But there's always a chance for renewal. There are many people that need to be set free from a phony past. And our church in Victoria is doing our best to do it, but it also requires a lot of interior healing, and I'll leave that alone for them. But James, you notice this, says it really clearly, and he quotes Jesus. Above all, my beloved, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. One of the other temptations that came up in our society, and one of the reasons why marriage got so screwed up, I think, is that people made their yes no and their no yes because they were afraid of what people would think of them. You know, she gets pregnant, then they rush to get married because they don't want the secret to get out that, you know, they were doing some things in secret. But we forget that lust and all of these things are mere trumpery sins. They're just small little things. Usually most people don't have control of their mind and body when they fall into passion. But to go in front of God and church and to lie. That's a little bit more sketchy. And you notice that the wedding vows, they're not full of this "I solemnly promise" language. It's like, "I, Bill, take you, Francine, to be my wife. I promise to be true to you in good times and in bad, in sickness and in health. I will love you and honor you all the days of my life." Right? That's something you say every day. That's not something you do once. That's a lifestyle. That's who we become. So let that yes be yes. And if you're unprepared to be able to make that commitment, then let your no be really clear. I think our culture has gotten into a lot of problems because we pretend we're more loving than we are, and the result is we become more bitter than we need to be. I think the real remedy is to truly live in the truth, to let that hardness of heart fall apart, to be truly available to each other, to be truly honest with each other. Because if that is what can give St. Bernardine the motivation to walk into a plague-filled city and to care for people, maybe we can do the same too. But our diseases are not so much with the body. Visit any care home, visit any hospital, the real disease is of the heart. People don't feel loved anymore. And yes, of course, just like the plague, you can go in and you can get sick yourself. But it's a lot better to try. It's a lot better to love. And it's always best to give your life for your brothers and sisters.